This is the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. We are, of course, on iHeartRadio. All you need to do is download the app to your smartphone or tablet and take us with you wherever. You can also go to WVON.com, and you can always call us. The call-in number is 312-374-8130. It is a beautiful Saturday, April 20th. And we are, of course, sponsored by attorney Steve Seidman of Seidman, Margulis & Fairman, LLP, 20 South Clark Street, 2 First National Plaza, Suite 700, Chicago, Illinois, 60603. Toll-free number is 888-837-3275, office 312-781-1977. Also, America's Heroes Group, proudly sponsored by Eastlake Management and Development Corporation. 2850 South Michigan Avenue, Chicago, Illinois, 60616. Office is 312-842-5500. And, of course, we speak truth to power by engaging, connecting, empowering, and transforming the lives of veterans, active and retired, along with their family members, through information, resources, and referrals. And we are always pleased to come up with some great guests and just getting out information, and we always ask, of course, that you join us. Again, I'm Cliff Kelly. I'm the host. Our executive producer is Glenda Smith, a digital media producer, always does a great job. Manny Corazzari, and we are just appreciative of the great job that Manny does. Hi, Manny. How you doing? We are pleased to have with us attorney Brian Kloss, America Heroes Group advisory board member and neutral arbitrator and mediator. And, Counselor, how are you today?
Couldn't be better, Cliff. Thanks for having me in.
That's great. America's Heroes Group Roundtable Outside the City, of course, with Brian Kloss. And we are so pleased to have him with us. And also, we have a guest we're going to discuss with our thing that with our subject today, and she is on our live line. You want to introduce her, Brian?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Sure.
It's a pleasure to introduce Brandy Desbennett Albrecht. Brandy's been known to me for a number of years. She's doing a lot of work in non-metropolitan populations. Her day job is she's the training manager for the Virginia Department of Veterans Services, managing all their veteran service officers. And the listeners in the greater Chicago area might wonder why Brandy is here talking about Virginia, but we're going to let Brandy explain just the similarities between Virginia and the great state of Illinois, and why it's appropriate to have her here.
Brandy, thank you for being with us. We certainly appreciate your taking time to give us this explanation, as Brian mentioned. And we just want to mention that she is the training manager for the Virginia Department of Veterans Services, Veterans Benefits Service Line. The Benefits Service Line is comprised of over 100 employees and 34 officers statewide that assist veterans and eligible family members obtain the federal and state benefits that they have earned through their military service. Also want to mention that Brandy is also an adjunct professor at Washington and Lee University School of Law in Lexington, Virginia, and teaches a practice on veterans law. She's a member of the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims Bar Association and the National Organization of Veterans Advocates. Her ties to the military and veteran community, however, is not just her work, but life as well. Her father, sister, and both grandfathers are all veterans. And she grew up on Coast Guard bases in different places in the United States. So she is very well knowledgeable of what veterans are about. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Cliff. I really appreciate it. And thank you, Brian, as well. Happy to be here tonight.
And we are so pleased to have you with us. Give us, I guess we should start off with similarities.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I right before I toss it to Brandy, I'll mention a couple of big points.
Yeah, sure.
Just about Illinois. Right. We have 102 counties, and your listeners have heard me talk about this, but 40 of those counties are metropolitan areas, Chicago and then some of our other small cities, Springfield, Decatur, Peoria, things like that. That leaves two-thirds of the state is non-urban, non-metro areas. And in those non-metro areas, we have well over 100,000 veterans, Cliff. And you know, it's very interesting what's happening in rural America. In the past decade, rural America, by a 2-to-1 margin, has depopulated. We're losing people in rural America. Mm-hmm. For every one person moving out into the country, there's two moving out of the country. And then, and one thing I will mention, some of your listeners may have wondering why we're talking about this rural topic. How many people in the listening audience have a family member or a friend who didn't come to a city, who stayed there, who, you know, the grandma's still down there, or grandpa's still down there, or their aunt's still down there? These are the people who are frequently, as Brandy will tell us, not represented by the system and not helped by the system. Mm-hmm. So on that happy note, we'll let Brandy take it and talk about some of the similarities and what she's seeing out there.
Okay, thanks, Brian. So not unlike, like you said, Illinois, so Virginia has 131 localities. Those include our cities as well as our counties, and 51 of them are considered rural. So Virginia is dealing with a total population of 8.4 million people. 7.2 are living in those urban areas, while only, you know, 1.1, almost 1.2 are living in the rural areas. And our veteran population and our two states' veteran populations are also very similar. We have about 719,000 veterans. And 184,000 of those are rural. So we're dealing with about 25% of our population of veterans that are living in a rural area. And then what's the impact on that? And that's what we're, you know, talking about today is how do you make sure that we're taking care of those people and that we haven't forgotten them just because they're not in our urban centers. And in Virginia, you can kind of define our urban centers by that 95 corridor. You know, you certainly have what we call NOVA, or our Northern Virginia area, and that's everything D.C., Metro, and then down into Richmond, which is our capital, and just straight down that 95 corridor. Our Tidewater areas, obviously, we've got a lot of bases out there, so those are pretty populous. And then they also call Roanoke, which is where I'm at, a urban area. I would slightly disagree with that, but, you know, there's standards out there in terms of what is rural and urban, so we certainly are more urban than our rural parts of the state. So so that's kind of how Virginia breaks down in terms of what we look like in our rural versus urban population.
Kind of sounds a bit like us, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah, it certainly does, Brian. Yeah, without a doubt. So you have a very important position, Brandy. How do you deal with this, the problems with these folks that are in the areas that are not in the region, in the cities, actually? That's what we're talking about.
Sure, yeah. So like you said, so I'm the training manager, and I just make sure that our training programs are fitting the bill and that all of our folks are shored up, and they've got all the tools in their toolbox, and they've got all the knowledge to go forth and do all the great work that they do. And I'll also disclaim, I'm merely an employee. I'm not speaking for our agency or anything like that. All the opinions are my own.
Can you tell she's a lawyer, Cliff?
Virginia, yes, absolutely.
Well, what kind of issues are you seeing? For us here, and I'm sure it's the same for you, there's a variety of issues in rural America, but one of the things we found here is elderly vets. We have a vast, high percentage of those rural vets are elderly. Can you tell us about what the veteran community looks like in rural America, Brandy?
So our elderly population, our rural elderly population, is certainly aging in the same sense as our Virginia population as a whole. So 70% of our rural veterans are over the age of 55. So that's going to create a host of problems in getting them access to services in our rural areas. They obviously will have medical needs. They're going to start to have unique legal needs as well. And I think when we're talking about this aging population that we have, there's kind of two ways that you can do that. Age in place, right? When you're staying in your home and you've got those care providers that are able to serve you in your home and in the community, or you're talking about being relocated into a skilled nursing facility or an assisted living facility, which in Virginia is very difficult in our rural areas. We have less of those facilities, and I'm assuming that's probably the same in Illinois as well.
Yes, you're right. It is, yeah.
Yeah, well, which one do you want to talk about first, Cliff? The aging in place in rural communities or skilled nursing in rural communities?
Brandy, what do you think? We wanted you on, obviously, because there is certainly a parallel situation between what we have in Illinois, Chicago, as you know, being the city, and those other 101 counties, primarily, and some of them, you know, we got more people in the studio right now than some of them have. So what is the most serious, as Brian mentioned, what's the most serious situation there?
I think both present an equally serious situation. I think the Mission Act, which is VA's latest creation, is going to play into both of those. So let's just take aging in place first. Because that, I think, is the preference of everybody, and certainly cheaper than doing a skilled nursing facility. So when you're talking about aging in place, you got to make sure that there's infrastructure there, healthcare infrastructure, so that you can do that, that you have people in the community or you have providers that can come into your home and do in-home healthcare.
And what are you seeing as far as the availability of those services in rural populations?
So in Virginia, there's a certainly a disparity depending on what county you're in. And Virginia actually has a really interesting map that you can look in, and you're scored on how well your access is to healthcare. And in our rural populations, you just don't have that infrastructure. There's just not enough docs, enough doctors to go around.
So the we heard a lot of talk recently about privatizing the VA. So somebody who's coming back to a rural community who has maybe polytrauma, you know, some complex issues, are they going to be able to get that care from a non-VA physician in their community?
Right. Highly unlikely, and certainly not alone. So Office of Rural Health says 56% of folks that are rural and enrolled in the VA medical center, they're over the age of 65. They're medically complex cases. They're more likely to be diagnosed with diabetes, obesity, high blood pressure, heart conditions, and that requires very frequent care, right? You can't let those things go 6 months to a year without touching a doctor's office. And so that definitely creates a problem when there is no access. There is no doctor's office.
Well, you mentioned...
Listen, let me ask this, because she did mention, you mentioned the Mission Act, Brandy, as VA's latest creation. What is that?
So the Mission Act, actually, it's a congressional creation as well, and VA is currently in the process of implementing all of the statutory guidance that Congress provided. There's two pieces of that which really play into our discussion here. Mm-hmm. One of them is that they're trying to replace the Choice Act and expand that community care. And that's great, again, if you have the infrastructure there. So in an urban area where you're talking about less access to a VA medical center because of wait times, it's obviously a great option to be able to go into your community and go pick whatever doctor that you like and that VA has obviously vetted. Versus when you're dealing with that in a rural community, again, it's great to have an option, but if you can't get to the VA medical center and you don't have a private doc in the area either, that act isn't serving you.
Wow. So what is happening with that then? The Choice Act, is that in place now? Is that correct?
That's correct, but there's funding issues. And then once Mission comes fully in place, and I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago, and I think they said they wanted to do that by June 6th, then Mission will fully replace the Choice Act.
Wow. Okay.
You sound less than enthused about that.
Me or Cliff, I think we have the same sentiments about it.
So you were talking about aging in place and the availability of physicians. So what are some of the other elderly issues that you're seeing for those aging in place and for those who are going to need some skilled nursing or a nursing home? I mean, before we start that, how many rural hospitals have you lost in Virginia? We're losing them here.
Yeah, we've lost two in Virginia. We almost lost a third, which was down actually very close to me, and it was a mental health hospital and one of the only in the areas. So fortunately, we've been able to keep that open, but it's probably one of those that is high risk of losing. Virginia's lost two in our Southwest and Southside areas since 2010. And then, of course, as you know, there's 104 nationwide that we've lost, and 600, almost 700, that are kind of on the chopping block at a high risk of being closed.
So we're losing, the stats I see, and correct me if I'm wrong, is we're losing more hospital beds. We're losing those at a faster rate than rural America is depopulating.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And even the ones that are still there, in Virginia, there's 67 skilled nursing facilities in a rural area, and there's like 300 in the state that would otherwise accept Medicare. Obviously, there's more if you're self-pay, but if you're Medicare, which is kind of the population that we're dealing with, your options are more limited.
This is an interesting situation because, of course, our guest, who is an expert on this issue, is talking about the same problems we're having here in Illinois. And that's the reason we having her on because we're seeing how the impact is to these elderly veterans and what kind of health care they're going to be getting. And anyone who would like to call us, we always want to hear from you. 312-374-8130 is our number. 312-374-8130. We have veterans, of course, we're able to talk to. And some of them, Brian, we've already heard, have had the same problems that Brandy is talking about.
Absolutely.
And that's because of, the reason that the states are so similar. Illinois has one large city, obviously, and the other 101 counties, you're on your own, so to speak. I hope it's not that bad. But we'll find out. It's a very important issue, and we're so pleased to have somebody who is really what Virginia is doing there with our guest is something that everybody needs to know about.
Absolutely.
And, yeah. So we're so pleased to have her on. We will be back with more in just a moment. This is the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. This is America's Heroes Group. I'm Cliff Kelly, and, of course, Brian Kloss is with us. And we are talking with our very esteemed guest, Brandy DeBennett-Albrecht, training manager for the Virginia Department of Veterans Services, Veterans Benefits Service Line. And there's some good things that are happening, but we need to know about them, that's for sure. Stay with us. We'll be back with more in just a moment. The host of America's Heroes Group. If you or a loved one has been injured in an accident or the result of malpractice, you have only one chance to get the compensation you deserve. You need a law firm you can trust with experience and resources who will fight on your behalf. With a proven track record of excellence both in and out of the courtroom, call Seidman, Margulis, and Fairman at 312-781-1977 for a free consultation or visit SeidmanLaw.net. That's Seidman, S-E-I-D-M-A-N, law.net. Eastlake Management is proud to honor America's heroes. We salute all who have served with valor in the U.S. Armed Forces. We honor your courage and sacrifice for our country and its citizens. We are proud of our employees who are U.S. veterans, and we appreciate the strength and commitment that they bring to the Eastlake team. Eastlake Management, founded in 1983, is dedicated to delivering affordable, comfortable housing to the residents at the properties we manage. Eastlake proudly salutes America's heroes. Hi, this is Cliff Kelly, WVON host and honored veteran, inviting you to listen every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m. as I host America's Heroes Group, where we speak truth to power regarding the treatment of veterans, retired, and active, discussing concerns for affordable housing, social services, Medicare, and all services geared to veterans. America's Heroes Group, where we speak truth to power.
With news and information coming to you from every direction, here's a team you can trust. It's The Commentators, WVON's exclusive group of thought leaders sharing their perspectives on everything from politics to business to community from every angle and every side. It's Kimberly Agoin, Carl West, Abdul Hakim Shabazz, and Yolanda Joe. The Commentators, the most exclusive club in Chicago. Join them weekdays, 9:20, 5:20, and 11:55 p.m. They are why we're the talk of Chicago.
I'm Sally, a volunteer at United Way. I'm asking people around the neighborhood what they think this place needs. Excuse me. Hi. What do you think this place needs?
I'd like to see more parking.
More playgrounds.
Free movies.
That's easy. Better restaurants.
And you, what do you think this place needs?
This place? More ice cream trucks.
Okay. How about you?
Wi-Fi everywhere?
I was thinking more money in the pockets of local families come tax time.
Can I change my answer?
I was just kidding about the ice cream.
Oh, that's way better.
Now that you mention it.
When it comes to getting better tax refunds into the hands of local families, what this place needs is you. To donate or volunteer, go to unitedway.org. Because great things happen when we live united. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
And this is America's Heroes Group Roundtable Outside the City with Brian Kloss. I'm Cliff Kelly, and we are pleased to continue this conversation with our outstanding guest, because we are talking about rural elderly veterans, specifically those in non-metro communities. And Brandy DeBennett Albrecht, training manager for the Virginia Department of Veterans Services, Veterans Benefits and Service Line, is an expert on this. And Brian, as we know, there is a comparison.
Oh, absolutely.
With what's going on in many places. But Virginia and Illinois are very much the same relative to what is happening.
Absolutely. If you look at some of the things affecting Virginia, like the collapse of tobacco farming, the collapse of coal, that has direct corollaries to deep southern Illinois. Deep southern Illinois used to be a center for the United Mine Workers. Good luck finding a mining job down there now. One of the things I wanted to mention before we go back to Brandy is the VA has recognized that they're not addressing rural vets. They've had a variety of initiatives. They're trying to do telepsychiatry. They're trying to do a lot of things internet-based and app-based. The only problem is that the vast majority of rural America is dial-up. Their apps don't work. Cliff has given me a quizzical look. Yes, a lot of rural America is dial-up, Cliff. They don't have the tech that we take for granted. And the solutions the VA is trying to come up with simply don't work. And Brandy is, I think we're lucky to have her, because she's one of the few people in the country talking about rural vets. What do urban vets and rural vets have in common, Cliff?
They both serve.
You're not the city folk or country folk. You're
all
Army
veterans, right? Yeah, you're all veterans. Brandy, what he's saying makes a lot of sense about the fact that how do you deal with that? The fact that these people, what did you call it, Brian? That they don't have the ability to get the information.
Right. They're in.
The electronics is not there.
They're just in an electronic oasis, an electronic desert. When I ran the legal clinic here, we'd get calls from people downstate and from other states, who would have to drive to a library in order to get a connection and be able to send us stuff. It was... You know, I hear stories from people in these areas. I'd ask Brandy, how many times have you had to go up and knock on a door or consult the map because in the hills and valleys, your GPS does not work?
Oh, absolutely. I remember some of my first trips kind of far southwest Virginia. And you hope you're on the right road because there's no cell service that GPS is linking up with. So, you know, we just do a lot of, you got to meet the veterans where they are. And Brian, we're like you, we hear a lot from our veterans. They're going to the library to get access and things like that. Cox Communications in Virginia has actually done a low cost program to try to solve some of that. And then I was listening to a podcast that Virginia Rural Health does as well. And this is nationwide, a program for finding broadband, and it's called Test IT, and it's an app that you can put on your phone, and then as you travel around, you can test your area for broadband, and then they're going to collect all this data and take it back to Congress to say, hey, all the broadband stuff isn't working. They're going to really try to identify where the gaps are. And that's great if you have a cell phone with, that you can download this app and actually use it. That was the first I had heard of it, and I thought that was really interesting.
Well, Brandy, before we went to break, you were starting to talk about some skilled nursing issues, and you were talking about the Mission Act. And Cliff's done some shows on the Mission Act. I'd like to follow up on that a bit. If we have people in these communities are going to be trying to age in place or go to a skilled nursing facility in their community, who's going to be providing that caregiver support? Where are they going to find those skills? What's happening in rural communities?
Yeah, that's a great segue to kind of the other really I think, impactful piece of the Mission Act, which is they're expanding the caregiver program. So the caregiver program used to only be available for those post 9/11 veterans with severe disabilities. Now they're going to open up to everybody, to all eras of veterans, which is really important. And they're going to phase that in, actually. And they're only going to start with folks that were discharged pre-1975. And then once that works, then they'll open it up to the rest is how it looks like it's going to go. But that program would allow, like, a spouse or maybe a child or a friend to kind of learn those skills and step into that role of caregiver for the veteran. And then the flip side of that question is, okay, well, do you, A, have somebody that's there that is also, I guess, has the ability to have those skills? Or are they dealing with their own disabilities where they can't step up to be caregiver without, you know, taking on a sacrifice of their own?
So we're looking at a lot of
see that they are expanding it.
So we're looking at spouses and kids, right?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, you could be a really nice neighbor or a friend that could also qualify as a caregiver, but generally your spouses and kids are where you're looking.
Now, this isn't just something that affects rural communities. This is going to affect any vet family listening out there. Where do you find more info about the Caregiver Act? And more importantly, what are the qualifications? How does a listener out there apply if they've got a Vietnam era parent or a post 9/11 child that needs this?
Yeah, they can't yet. Hopefully they will be able to do that starting June 6th, and they'll just work through their VA medical center, and hopefully that's a place that they can get, and they'll start the process there. But there is an application, and then there's, you know, kind of vetting of who is this person that's going to step in as caregiver. They have to go through a certain amount of training, but respite care is provided for that veteran that obviously is needing the care, so they fill that place. And then the Mission Act also, it talks about really incorporating this caregiver into the whole treatment plan of the veteran. So that's going to be a real plus, too. And so long as that person is able to really bridge that gap and step over those hurdles of transportation or even internet and broadband issues, if there's telehealth involved, if they can help, then it's going to be a great system. It's going to work really well for our folks in rural areas. But I worry about the skills gap.
Hope springs eternal. What's your assessment?
Yep, that's true. Yeah. That's true. One thing I want to make sure, and I know you, Brandy, you would be looking after this, but a rural vet women, the female, has the VA forgotten about them, or is that covered?
Such a hard issue.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, so 6% of rural women are enrolled in the VA healthcare. So I guess if you should really think about that the other way. So of all the veterans that live in a rural area that are enrolled in VA healthcare, only 6% of those are female veterans.
Wow.
Yeah, and in 2017, it was really interesting. The Office of Rural Health basically flat out said we're under-equipped to provide for our rural female veterans.
So they recognize there's a problem.
Yeah, they absolutely did. They recognized the problem. And then so what have they done kind of since then? And I think they have tried to take steps, but I'm not sure if it's quite reached the rurality issue yet. There's a lot of action going on right now in the sphere of women veterans, which is great. So we have the Center for Women's Veterans, which is currently advertising the 2019 Empowered Virginia Women's Summit that's actually here in Virginia, hosted by DVS in Hampton. So that was exciting. They also have a Women Veterans Call Center, which is 855-VA-WOMEN. And there's a chat program to that, too. And then there is a call center, which is kind of news to me, that 24/7 healthcare professional will be available for enrolled women veterans, and that's through the VA Medical Center. And it doesn't give you a phone number online. It just says call your medical center to get this phone number. Talk to your women's veterans program manager at the VA Medical Center.
So how do you get there after hours? How do you get to that after hours then? If it's 24/7, but they won't give you the number.
Right. So call 9 to 5 and then and keep that number.
So, oh, wow.
Way to go, V.
Yeah. Well, at least they're trying. I'm not sure. One thing, Brandy, we'll make sure, and Brian, I know, agrees, to see exactly what our situation is here relative to the rural areas. That's why we were so happy to have you come on, because you have been able to give us such great information about circumstances, because the Virginia and Illinois, a lot of people don't understand the comparison. And we certainly have that. As Brian was mentioning, folks who used to have jobs down in southern Illinois who don't have them anymore, and 102 counties, and, you know, Chicago is only not even a total county of Cook. But, of course, here you can, you know, we can do a lot better. So, you know, what can we learn here, Brandy, based on what you do know about our circumstances and our conversation today? People who are listening, we have people listening from everywhere, thank goodness, and, you know, also because of the great job that our wonderful digital media producer does. we have people that are all over the country. But what to you is the most important thing that's happening, Brandy, relative to this, these people that are really outside of the box, so to speak?
I guess I would say that the two things that I would be most hopeful about would be telemedicine and broadband. If we could get those two things working in tandem, I just think it would answer so much of the issues that are going on in the rural communities. After that, I mean, we could make a whole list of ways that we can continue to address these problems. I mean, that there's just, you don't fix just one problem and everything is solved. You know,
right.
One leads to another. So,
yeah.
But I think certainly telemedicine and broadband would fix an immediate need.
Have you seen any inroads being made in those specific areas?
So in Virginia, we have. So our VHA hospitals that are in Virginia, the medical centers, they've been leaning pretty heavily into telemedicine. And particularly on the mental health side. So that's been very helpful. And so we've seen some of that come to fruition. But again, it's an access issue. So when you're talking telemedicine, you're not necessarily always talking in the home, but maybe you've got some satellite location set up. And then from that satellite location, you're calling into a VA medical center. But I'll take baby steps.
Well, and Brandy's in a unique position, Cliff.
Sure.
Because
mm-hmm.
D.C. is right on her doorstep.
Right.
VA's
helps.
Testing stuff there.
Yeah.
And getting it out in the field fast. Mm-hmm. So what they're seeing in Virginia, we're hopefully going to see in the not-too-distant future in Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Brian, you're on top of those sort of things. Do you know what Illinois is doing?
Illinois is not as far advanced. We've got, you know, we're very lucky. We've got the place up at North Chicago, the Level Center,
sure,
the combined center up there. We've got our two here in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and downstate we've got Marion, and then we've got all the other smaller facilities in between. But the telemedicine is not up to where it needs to be,
mm-hmm.
And that's limited by tech. Until we are able to get tech out into these communities, you know, they're going to be doing what they continue to be doing. And that brings up another big issue as we look at these communities is, frankly, transportation.
Yeah.
How do you get to the VA if you're living 2 hours from the
mm-hmm.
VA and you're not getting on the blue line because there isn't any?
Mm-hmm.
So...
Brandy, how have you all been dealing with that? That's a good point that he's making, the transportation.
Yeah, also a huge issue in Virginia. And we rely on many different folks. You know, our other VSOs that operate in the state, like DAV, they'll run a shuttle back and forth to a VA medical center, so that's been helpful. Other church organizations, they'll do it. And then there's some other partners that we can use. We also have DVS has a whole separate service line that we call VVFS, the Virginia Veteran and Family Support. And sometimes they can help us solve those issues too. They're just a whole network of folks. It's just finding them and tapping into them. But yeah, there's no public transportation that's a sure thing. You know, there's a line that'll run you from Roanoke to Blacksburg, think Virginia Tech. It's only about maybe 40 minutes down the road. And from Roanoke to the end of the state, still another 4 hours. So it's not a complete solution in terms of the public transportation that we've got here.
That's a problem, Brian, we're going to have here.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a problem. Now, Brandy, since you do all this work with the Veteran Service Officers, there's something that's going to be of real interest to everybody listening who's a vet or is involved with the vet, and that's the recent changes to how the VA is handling cases and appeals and how they're going to make it, I think, a lot more difficult for the vet to appeal an incorrect VA decision. Care to comment on that?
I would love to comment on that.
That was called slow, high, and over the plate.
All right.
So the AMA, the Appeals Modernization Act, it did. It completely changed the appeal system and how veterans will make choices on how they appeal. So first of all, they have to be able to make a choice in terms of the appeal option that's best for them. And that can be difficult, and hopefully that's where they're seeking the assistance of representation, and we're driving them into our offices. But the challenge is that, you know, VA, whenever they made a decision on a claim, they used to send you all the paperwork that says, here's how you appeal, and here's the appeal form with it. Now they're not going to do that. They're going to tell you, here's how you appeal. You need to go online and get the forms yourself.
Mm. Yeah. So imagine coming back, perhaps say a brain injury. You're 20 years old. You got a brain injury. The VA tells you you're not getting benefits, and then they toss it back to you to try and figure it out all on your own. Mm-hmm. Thanks, VA. Sorry, Brandy, yeah. I interrupted you.
No, that's exactly it. You know, it's here's our decision, and have fun. We'll figure out what to do next. And that's a terrible place for a veteran to be, particularly in a rural community.
Sure.
A, how are you accessing that? Can you access a representative? You know, there's just a whole host of other issues that go along with that. And then let's say you can access the forms. Are you making the right appellate decision? Because each of the three lanes are so vastly different. So I think it's going to create a lot of challenges for our rural veterans that don't have as easy access to representation.
But with your position, Brandy, I mean, you know, you're a lawyer, you know, and so forth. You teach veterans law. You're a member of the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims and the Bar Association. Therefore, we can go on and on and on. I'm sure that if there's anybody who can advise these people that have a problem, as Brian points out, you can give them a lot of help. Are you able to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we just hope that we are out there enough in our communities that they know who to call, and that they can find us to answer the question. But yeah, we can answer them all day long, and you know, so that's really great. And there's plenty of resources out there. It's just making sure we're connecting them to the right place.
Well, and every state's got somebody like Brandy. There's veteran service officers in every state. One of the disadvantages we have in Illinois is that they're county-based, and most states are like that, and the state funds them. They send the money through the county, and the county provides them with space. We get to deep southern Illinois, they're not staffed. We don't have
they're
them.
They're not staffed.
We don't have them in many of these tiny counties. So they have to travel to other counties, because most veteran service officers are not limited to their counties. They help a vet.
Right.
But if you're way south in Polk County and say they don't have one, where are you going? You're driving 60 miles to Marion, Illinois.
St. Clair. Or
St. Clair. Marion. Absolutely. And if you have had an illness or injury that affects your ability to drive, how are you getting there?
Yeah.
You're bumming a ride. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, just sounds particularly cruel of what we're doing to these vets. And Brandy, I'm sure your stats mirror ours, because it's the same in a lot of the other states, is that rural vets come back to their community because that's where their support network is. If they're injured or ill, those who aren't are depopulating at a faster rate than the rest of their community. So they're using their GI Bill and they're going up to Peoria to work for CAT or Chicago to do something or getting out of Dodge. And we have some communities in Illinois with twice the disabled rate of the national average. And that's, I think, only going to increase. Brandy, are you seeing that in other communities as well?
Yeah, we are. And I would say it's even, I would think that most of, especially our younger populations that are getting out of the service today, they're not going back home to that rural community because there's nothing there. You know, the unemployment rates in those communities can be upwards of 25%, especially since those industries left, you know, so they're not, they're using, like you said, they're using their GI bills and they're moving into Richmond or into Roanoke even, or Northern Virginia, D.C. I mean, you see, we have a lot of both state jobs and federal jobs here, and we're attracting those folks. You know, and we're just not seeing folks go back into those rural communities once they've left. And that's why you have 70% of our rural veterans that are over the age of 55. You don't have that young blood that's necessarily going back home.
As somebody who turned 55 a few weeks ago, I take great offense to that. Just saying.
Sorry, Brian.
Well, so where do you see us going here? I mean, you're one of the pros on this, Brandy, and we appreciate all the information you've given us. Help us. Where do we go now? What's going to happen?
I don't know, and I wouldn't even call me a pro. I just read a lot. but I don't know how you solve these problems, because when you solve one, you've got another one right behind it. I think the most we can do is continue to talk about these things, make sure we're getting it in front of the right people, and then, you know, we can make networks of change and not just changing one thing at a time. And I think that's going to be the key to success. I certainly think there's a ton of ways that we can be innovative, and I've heard other people kind of say the same thing. You know, you have a problem, and this is what people do, is that they fix problems.
That's
and
right.
You have a good opportunity here, but you just have to be willing to take on a lot.
Different
aspects.
I say this as somebody who lives in a state that has a double amputee female combat vet in the Senate. Is there anybody in the House or the Senate that you see as a particularly strong advocate on behalf of the issues of rural vets and even of rural vet women?
In Virginia?
No, in Washington. I don't know if you're up on your Capitol Hill. I would think that our senator would be a natural on this one, Cliff.
Yeah, combat vet, lost both legs and helicopter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is there anybody on Capitol Hill particularly concentrating on this, or are you a voice in the wilderness on this?
I hope I'm not the voice in the wilderness on it. You know, you certainly see the names that are coming up on, and there's a lot of initiatives in Congress right now and even in our state legislature talking about veterans. And I just, you know, I think we continue to owe that duty. I understand that the National Organization of Veterans Advocates, they have kind of a what they call a Hill Day, that they go to D.C. and they're talking to their folks and trying to get issues addressed as well. So. I wouldn't say I have a single champion name in mind, but I do think it's enough of a bipartisan issue that, you know, folks are listening. Mm-hmm. So
it well should be. You don't want to give us that name?
No.
Right. ever the skillful attorney, she doesn't want to alienate a potential advocate on behalf of her issue.
Well, you have given us some great information, Brandon. We certainly appreciate it because we have a comparable problem. And, you know, as long as we know there's people like you, We hope that the same thing, the things can be solved right here in Illinois because we've got a lot of vets.
I hope we can catch up to what Brandy's got going in Virginia.
Absolutely. Brandy, thank you. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, guys. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk. And like I said, the more we talk about it, I think more people will hear and pay attention, and we can solve problems.
I think you're right. You're absolutely right. Thank you so much, Brandy.
All right. Thank you, guys. Have a great evening.
And you too now. Attorney Brian Clough, thank you so much, sir.
Always a pleasure.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for reducing your normally high standards to allow me to come in as a guest.
Come on. You know what I think of you. You're great.
And likewise, my friend.
Okay, thanks so much for coming in. All right. Stay with us. We will be back with more of America's Heroes Group right after this. Good afternoon. This is the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. I'm Cliff Kelly. This is America's Heroes Group. We are on iHeartRadio. All you need to do is download the app to your smartphone or tablet to take us with you wherever you go. You can also go to WVON.com. And you can call us 312-374-8130. And, of course, you can always get social, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Well, we are pleased. This is America's Heroes Group Roundtable. We serve the world millennial veterans in action with Ken Porter. And we are so pleased to have Ken with us, Navy veteran, third class, petty officer. How are you, sir?
I'm all right. Thanks for having me again.
Great to see you again. Yeah, you're looking great. Okay.
I am.
Thank you so much. And we have another panelist we are pleased to have. Dr. Danielle Cazare. Is that close enough?
Kazare.
Okay, Kazare.
Right.
Oh, just Kazare.
Hi, Cliff.
That's right. Thank you. Dr. Kazare comes to us from the Ready for 100 Coalition. She is a co-founder, Bronzeville Urban Development, an organization she co-founded with her husband, Charles Sutton. The organization is dedicated to bringing healthy communities to life. Starting with Bronzeville, currently the organization is striving to create locally controlled renewable energy projects and dedicating efforts to promoting energy democracy. Now, a lot of people don't realize that, but what is going on here, Ken, is the fact that there is a law passed relative to what Chicago is going to be doing relative to renewable energy, right?
Right, yeah. 100%. Renewable energy across the whole city, and this is the largest city to do this. Chicago is massive, so I mean that's a massive infrastructure movement that we're going to see. And by 2030, and then 2045, and 2040 for CTA. So imagining what this is going to look like is going to be a big deal.
It certainly will, and of course I'm so glad that. You and the doctor are involved in this, and of course, this is going to create a lot of jobs for a lot of people.
Yeah, we hope so. That's why we're here talking today. Young people already in the field, and hopefully veterans as well. Many of them have
veterans.
Transferable skills.
Sure.
So, what is that going to look like in what the new jobs that are going to spring up, and what are those jobs going to be?
That's why I'm so happy Ken Porter is with us as a veteran. Doc, help us here. This is your background on this is just great. You're the co-founder of Bronzeville Urban Development. Tell us about this. How is this going to affect us?
Well, this was a massive undertaking by the Sierra Club, and we have to give props to Kyra Woods, the young woman who worked tirelessly to get this resolution passed, and she pulled together so many organizations, mine being only one of hundreds that were involved in trying to make sure that we asked for things that everyone across the city could benefit from. Of course, we need the renewable energy for the planet, but we're talking about the green economy. This is a very real thing that, is happening, must happen, should happen. And as minorities, we are making sure we're at the table. The FEJA that came out, the Future Energy Jobs Act, for those that are unfamiliar with it, set aside some guidelines for the people that should be targeted for retraining. And out of that was the Department of Children and Family, kids that are aging out and becoming adults and will need jobs when they come out of the department. Also, returning citizens, which is a concern because a lot of our young black people were imprisoned for nonviolent drug offenses. They come out, get retrained, but can they get into the union? So we need a serious expungement efforts to make sure that these young people who were locked up for nonviolent drug offenses are able to partake in the green economy. And then, of course, veterans. Like Ken mentioned, they have transferable skills, but they also have skills that they can be trained for.
That's right.
There will be all kinds of jobs from putting solar panels together to installing solar panels to learning about geothermal energy, which we could do in the city. Why aren't we putting wind turbines in the lake? The wind turbine industry is burgeoning. So these are real good-paying jobs that we need to have in our community.
Absolutely. Ken, are we going to be, well, I know we will be able to reach out to the veterans. This is very important, as the doctor said. We can, a lot of veterans out there who have skills already but can be retrained if need be.
Right, exactly. You know, I think what a lot of people don't know about the military is that every job that exists in the civilian world also exists in the military.
Correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, electrical engineers, we have nuclear engineers. I was actually almost recruited to the Navy for nuclear engineering before I saw the curriculum with the thermodynamics and other things that I didn't understand at the time. But, you know, those individuals, once they come out, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, there are some nuclear engineering jobs, but I don't know how prevalent there are. And me and the doctor were talking beforehand, you know, what happens when nuclear plants go away and we do move to these green technology jobs? How are we going to get veterans transitioned over to these new jobs?
This is so important to reach out to the veterans, and I'm sure we'll be doing that, but a whole lot of folks need to be doing that because this is going to be just a great thing
for
so many people. And as Doc mentioned, people with folks with that have arrest records or did some time. Many of those, particularly with the fact that seemingly they're going to be legalizing marijuana, a lot of folks have a record relative to pot, you know.
Yeah.
And obviously, if that becomes legal, then that should be taken off the record. So that's something that, you know, we'll be working on also, of course.
Right, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one thing that definitely got my interest with this is how do we move forward with this in an equitable way? If you look at most of the data, a lot of the people who are negatively affected by, you know, climate change are people who live in black and brown communities.
Correct.
Right? And How do we make sure that those people don't get left behind in this process as we move the city to 100% clean energy? And, you know, I was hoping to talk a little bit about, you know, how do we engage those communities moving forward?
Ken, that's an excellent point, because you're absolutely right. You know, the south and west side are the places where you'll have the worst problems with air pollution.
Right.
Which has always been the case. How talk about that. How can we make sure that that is taken care of in, you know, in this whole, this is going to be a great issue. Got a lot of money here, too.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm actually going to refer to Dr. Kizier for this one, because
okay,
I'm not a complete expert at this. But, mm-hmm. you know, so how are some ways that we can, you know, make sure that we're engaging folks on the south and west side mm-hmm. as we move forward?
Well, yeah, it's not. I'm not an expert in electrical engineering. Let's get that straight. I run a not-for-profit. That's what my bailiwick is. But our interest started in this way back with the first Earth Day, and we also worked with trained with Al Gore. So we saw this coming, and
right.
we knew mm-hmm. that unless we are dogmatic about making sure that the minority community understands how important this is, that we were going to be left behind instead of being sitting at the table. So our organization started, founded on teaching sustainability in the minority community. And then from there, talking about sustainability, we are talking also economic sustainability. That means having a job, for one thing. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that people don't seem to understand the biggest reason for payday loans in the black community is the utility bill. When you think about that, that's earth-shattering. How do we make energy more affordable so that we don't have families going to payday loans to pay their electric bill?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways to do that is with distributed energy, small microgrids, being behind the meter. Now, basically what that just means is you're cutting out the generation and the distribution of energy in Illinois are two separate entities. So, for instance, in our community in Bronzeville, what started this project was there's an old railroad embankment that runs through where I'll probably go by it all the time and don't think about it. It has those beautiful murals on King Drive.
Mm.
Well, that used to run to the stockyard. So
right.
we had about 2.5 miles of elevated mm-hmm. south-facing property on which to put solar panels. So we started looking into, how do we do this? Who owns it? How do we get it? The city didn't own it. The county didn't own it. It took us a decade to get to the bottom of the ownership. It had been sold during the Conrail bankruptcy. So we started working with the community about...
Who does own that, Doc? Pardon me for...
Well, right now, it's being transferred to us.
That's great.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
It took us 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Cook County has been extremely helpful. President Preckwinkle has really gone to bat for us to
mm-hmm.
get rid of the back taxes that had accumulated on the property
mm-hmm.
because nobody knew who owned it,
mm-hmm.
including the owner of it, didn't know he had certain sections of it. So it was a tangled mess. So that's being transferred to us. But the important thing about that is we can produce energy right there in the neighborhood. Now, at this time, that energy will still go through the wires. It'll go through the distribution systems.
Mm-hmm.
But there also is a large housing development there for moderate and low-income housing that for part of the time, they can be off of the meter, which will bring their electric bill from approximately 12 cents a kilowatt hour to 2 cents a kilowatt hour.
Mm-hmm.
So we can work out deals like this with the energy company
mm-hmm.
where it's for certain populations we can bring the actual cost down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reasons we got involved in this. And did I answer your question? The Sierra Club? This is all part of the discussions at
the
Sierra
absolutely.
Club.
Yeah, absolutely. This is getting good. Sure.
These are the things we talk about. How do we bring equity not only
mm-hmm.
to jobs, not
mm-hmm.
only to getting people trained to do jobs, but how do we also get equity in helping to stabilize the economy of the community? So
that's great.
Yeah,
that sounds
yeah.
on the side. Yeah, because we certainly need it. So, Ken, how do we involve vets?
Well, that's the thing that I think we're trying to figure out is this equity piece. How do
mm-hmm.
we make sure
mm-hmm.
all voices are represented at the table?
Right.
Because, you know, there are many voices that are, you know, already... people think that many voices at the table are all, you know, just more white affluent voices, but how do we engage people of color? How do we engage veterans? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a little bit of a question mark still, is how do we make sure these people are heard? But I think one way to make sure these folks are heard is, you know, when they're making their transition off of active duty and they're moving into cities, is, you know, working with the Department of Defense and all the different job training programs available, which there are a variety, mm-hmm. And making sure that, you know, these green technology jobs are a part of that menu, right? Because, I mean, these are the jobs that are going to be here for decades to come.
Right.
So.
And probably with pretty good pay. Yeah, rational.
I would imagine right, because of the specialized knowledge needed for these jobs.
Exactly, training, yeah.
Right, so that's the big question mark here, is how do we make sure the equity piece is being heard from all communities, making sure we're engaging all those folks?
Doc, I commend you what you folks have been able to do with this with law being passed and all. And did you have a lot of... opposition to this?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
That's what I presume.
The change is difficult.
Sure.
And particularly when you're talking about potentially changing business models of monopolies.
Yes, particularly, yes.
And they have some real structural issues that they have to deal with. When you're talking about loading a lot of renewable energy onto the grid that's old, which is one of the reasons why the smart grid technology is so important. Bronzeville is also the site of where Commonwealth Edison is building the first microgrid that will be tied into the Illinois Institute of Technology microgrid. And that smart technology, the smart grid, will allow you to control your energy usage. You can look at your computer and say, I use most of my energy at night. It'll cost me less than if I do the laundry during the daytime when everyone's running computers. So people will be able to make decisions as to how and when they use their electricity. And this is a very important part about the smart grid. So we're looking forward to that, but it's going to take a lot of training. And when we talk about jobs for the veterans, it's not just installing solar panels or putting solar panels together. You've got a huge problem that we have right now that we all should be very aware of. And that is the utilities being hacked. So cybersecurity is going to be a huge industry when you talk about protecting the utility system. And tell me the military doesn't know something about cyber.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Cybersecurity.
Quite a bit.
Yeah. It's another whole series of jobs.
Yeah.
Highly skilled. So they'll go from extremely skilled jobs to low-skilled jobs, which means everybody should have a potential spot to fit into.
I think that's great. This is great information. Let's take a caller. Pat's calling. Pat, how are you?
Hi, everybody.
Hi. How you doing, Pat? Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm. I'm fine. Good to hear you, Cliff.
Thank you.
I'm trying to find out the training. When does it start? Who gets to do the job? I'm trying to get info or contact for that. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Who wants to respond to Pat?
Well,
Doc?
Yeah, I can help a little bit.
Sure.
There is a organization here called Blacks in Green, run by a dynamic little woman by the name of Naomi Davis. She has a training program. I think if you go online to the Illinois Solar for All, you can find the other agencies around the city that are doing training for installation and assembly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's out there. It's online. And if I can't think of the number right now, but you could call Naomi Davis at Blacks in Green as well. And she also has a list of the training programs.
Okay.
And I think the Sierra Club through Kyra Woods may also have this information. Yeah, that's one thing we need to mention. The Sierra Club is not all white folks in the rural community. We have black people in the Sierra Club, and Kyra is an example of that. She led the charge on the 100% renewable energy for Chicago.
Oh, great. Great. That's great. And it's just going to be, obviously, it's going to take a lot of people and a lot of money.
Yes.
And it's all going to be worthwhile.
We certainly hope so. We don't have a choice, Cliff.
I know, that's exactly right.
Yeah, the planet is... It's going to be fine. It'll just shake us off.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, when Al Gore mentioned that, I don't know, you know, a lot of folks just don't believe that. But thank goodness there are more people who, and I just commend you for the great work that you've done, Doctor. But as long as we've got to do this, and we do have to do it, there's no doubt that we certainly need to get some people employed, and that's why I'm so glad that Ken is involved in what he is doing, and Ken Porter, and that's just a great thing, because there's so many veterans that I know that need help.
Right.
And, you know, that are folks that are smart and certainly willing to work. Many of them have been trained already, I'm sure, in some of these things, mm-hmm. and so that'll be a great thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just last week is actually the last day of my reserve contract, and there was supposed to be all these different things in place for transitioning out, and I haven't been really in the loop on that. So it's
Are
really
you taking
important.
A re-upping?
The contract is over. We'll see.
Okay.
So, but yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, why it's so important that we have these conversations, because the military isn't always giving them the support that they need to compile these resources,
sure.
to make them available to them, to let them know all these opportunities exist, as she mentioned, cybersecurity, logistics,
sure.
energy. These are all skills that can mm-hmm. transfer over mm-hmm. pretty easily in today's market, and getting them trained for tomorrow's market.
I think it's great. It's very good. Ken, do you have a number where people can reach you?
Sure. Mm-hmm. People can reach me at 773-450-0222.
Yeah, okay. I think we gave it. Number before when you were here. You're doing a great job, Ken Porter. I really appreciate you. And, Doc, thank you so much.
It was my pleasure, Cliff.
This is something that we're going to see a lot on this. Very, very positive program. And they've got to accommodate us. And I'm so glad that you mentioned the South and the West Side, because when we talk about air pollution, my goodness.
Right.
Yeah, some of it used to be pretty rough. Happy holiday to both of you.
Thank you so much.
And thank you so much for coming in.
All right. Appreciate
Anytime.
It.
Anytime.
Great. Very good. Thank you so much. This is the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. We are pleased to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Eastlake Management is proud to honor America's heroes. We salute all who have served with valor in the U.S. Armed Forces. We honor your courage and sacrifice for our country and its citizens. We are proud of our employees who are U.S. veterans, and we appreciate the strength and commitment that they bring to the Eastlake team. Eastlake Management, founded in 1983, is dedicated to delivering affordable, comfortable housing to the residents at the properties we manage. Eastlake proudly salutes America's heroes.
Hi, this is Cliff Kelly, the host of America's Heroes Group. If you or a loved one has been injured in an accident or the result of malpractice, you have only one chance to get the compensation you deserve. You need a law firm you can trust with experience and resources who will fight on your behalf. With a proven track record of excellence both in and out of the courtroom, call Seidman, Margulis, and Fairman at 312-781-1977 for a free consultation, or visit SeidmanLaw.net. That's Seidman, S-E-I-D-M-A-N, law.net.
Hi, this is Cliff Kelly, WVON host and honored veteran, inviting you to listen every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m. as I host America's Heroes Group, where we speak truth to power regarding the treatment of veterans, retired, and active, discussing concerns for affordable housing, social services, Medicare, and all services geared to veterans. America's Heroes Group, where we speak truth to power.
Adopt U.S. Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting. A Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it. That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Good afternoon. This is the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. This is America's Heroes Group. We are on iHeartRadio. The time, of course, is 5:34, and we are continuing, as we do, America's Heroes Group. We serve the world's millennial veterans in action. And also, right now, we're going to do something that is just excellent. We have in our studio... As I say, we serve, the world continues. This is someone who certainly serves. He is a Chicago police officer. Harvey Marlin is with us. How are you, sir?
How are you? Good evening.
Good, good. Great to see you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Tell us about, before we talk about some of the things you're doing with the department, your dad was a veteran, right?
I have two sons.
Oh, you two sons. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. My oldest son served in the Navy, the U.S. Navy. He was stationed in Norfolk, Virginia on the USS Roosevelt.
Okay.
Sure. He did a full tour there, active duty. He's also a Navy reservist at this time.
Okay.
A little well over 10 years now. And my youngest son served in the U.S. Army. He was stationed in Fort Wainwright, Alaska. And he did a tour in Afghanistan. He's actually a combat veteran. There is a little distinct difference between our regular veterans and our combat veterans. The combat veterans we need to give extra care to and support.
I think that is great. That's wonderful. And I agree with you. You know, that's good. You are not a veteran.
I am not.
Okay. And I just think it's great. You are a police officer.
Yes.
And you're reaching out and working with all sorts of groups, and I just think that's a great thing. The You are the president of Chicago Police Department Veteran Sailing Club. Tell us about that.
So it's the Chicago Police Sailing Association is the title, and yes, I am the president. It was started in 2016. I am a longtime sailor. I've been sailing for at least 15 years. I'm on my own third boat. Actually, before I started sailing on my own boat, I was a crew member on other boats.
Okay.
I didn't own a boat.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the things that I'm trying to get everyone to understand is you don't have to own a boat to sail. All you need is the passion and the desire to learn. So I sailed for years before I actually owned my own boat. But what I thought when I was out there sailing is how peaceful it is and how calming it is. I call it my religion.
That's great.
I do. And what I was hoping every time I'm out there sailing is to get officers out there, to get police officers out there to share an experience. And that's when I came up with the idea of the Chicago Police Sailing Association as an opportunity to draw police officers in and their families to learn how to sail.
Did your son have anything to do with that, the Navy?
Well, actually, it was my younger son who sailed with me the most.
Okay.
One particular year, he sailed with me the entire summer. This was after he got out.
Oh, after he got out. Yes. That's what I was wondering.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one of his battle buddies that he served in Afghanistan with from the East Coast came and sailed with us as well. My youngest son also sailed with me during the Cuba race. We sailed to Cuba in 2017.
Oh, that's got to be
raced
great.
With me. He did. He raced with me then. There's a certain personality type for men and women that serve in armed forces and law enforcement. And oftentimes when the work gets tough, they step forward. And I see that time and time again when the veterans are on the boat.
That's very interesting. Personality type, people who have served in the military or police.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That makes a lot. And I presume, I don't know the numbers, but many, many policemen are veterans.
Yes, there are.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, there's a lot of black veterans. I mean, we always have the image that we have in our mind of that doesn't include black representation in the armed forces. Every war effort that the United States has had, there's been a black American that's fought in it.
Sure.
Even up to this day.
Right.
So there's several minorities that have represented the country. So, yes, there are several police officers that are military veterans as well as young black officers.
You know, Officer Marlin, I'm sorry to hear that there are a lot of people who don't recognize that fact. We've had black veterans, in, as you just pointed out, in every war we've had.
That's right.
And, I hope, you know what America's Heroes Group is all about. That's why you're here today. But I hope people recognize that. I'm glad you brought it up because I just presumed that most people know that. You know, and maybe you're right that they don't. But every war.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, I was just looking over something. Well, I won't get into that now, but about what some African-American. And the point is, even though we had African-Americans who were fighting wars, they were still discriminated against. And that's why some of them had to get in World War One. They got awards from the French because of the fact, you know what I'm talking
yes,
about.
Yes,
you know,
I know, yes.
Yeah,
very well aware.
Right,
yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
So it's something. So tell us more about what is going on with the sailing club. That sounds great.
So another aspect of it is there's a sailboat race that was also created by the Chicago Police Sailing Association. It's called the Gold Star Regatta. And the Gold Star Regatta is a sailboat race that supports the surviving family members of fallen officers. Mm-hmm. It's a fundraiser. So any funds that are raised during the race are used to support our surviving family members. In 2017, I had a boat manned by all veterans.
Mm.
And one of them was my good friend, John Lyle. We call him Jack. If you remember, that was a discussion that you and I had some time
right,
ago.
Right, exactly.
About Jack.
I do remember.
Yes.
Right. Uh-huh.
I'm sorry to say that Jack has passed since our
sure.
conversation.
Right.
Not too long ago, a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
He was 98 years old.
Yeah.
He, he lived a good life.
Yep.
And he had no regrets. But Jack was at the helm aboard the sailboat Simple Justice. And I have a photo, if you're able to see it, on my iPad of the crew of the veterans that were on the boat, including Jack. Jack still sailed the entire summer last year. I believe his last sail was in September in 40 knots of wind. When everybody else didn't go out, Jack was out there.
He went out.
He was quite a daredevil, as a matter of fact. He was a great sailor.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to show. That's great.
So here's a photo right here. There's Jack in the middle.
Uh-huh. That is great. Now, and this Gold Star Regatta, this is a great idea, Officer Marlin. It supports the Gold Star families.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the Gold Star term, I'm sure you're familiar with it, but I'll say it for your listeners. Mm-hmm. The Gold Star term is a military term that identifies families that have lost members in the armed services.
Right.
So law enforcement uses the same term. We have our Gold Star family.
Yeah, sure.
Exactly. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's what the Gold Star Regatta represents.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great. And that will be coming up. Will they have the regatta again this
year?
Yes,
yeah, it's an annual race.
This is an annual, that's what
it's an annual race. This is our third year.
Okay.
And it's June 15th of this year on a Saturday. It will be posted on Yacht Scoring, so sailors can register on Yacht Scoring. I'm not sure if the link is active yet or not, but at some point it'll be on Yacht Scoring, and sailboats can register for the race. And we'll have a fundraising page so that people can donate to support our family members.
That's just great. But, you know, one thing you mentioned, Officer, and I agree, I've been fortunate enough to have friends with boats, and it's such a soothing thing.
It is.
When you mention that, it really is.
It is.
You know, it's just a wonderful thing, and, of course, when you can go out on Lake Michigan during the time when the fireworks or whatever, you know, it's a totally different world.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
yes, it is.
It is. It's great. And I guess a lot of folks, who started this, the sailing, the Veteran Sailing Club?
Oh, so the Chicago Police Sailing Association, what I did is I wanted to have the concept that we have teams. So we have a boat that's manned by all police officers. Mm-hmm. And then a boat manned by all veterans. I've been working on a boat with all Chicago Fire Department members.
Great.
That's been a challenge, but maybe they'll hear me and they'll step up to the plate.
I know a friend I'll talk to about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I also have, we have an LGBT group.
Great.
That's brand new.
Great.
This year.
Great.
It's separate from ours, but they have reached out to us for support. Because in the sailing community, we all support each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they have a race called the Rainbow Regatta, which is at the end of the summer, sometime in September. So with the Chicago Police Department, I'm sure there are members that are LGBT.
Sure.
We want to put a boat together that are all LGBT police officers. So we're working on these concepts.
Oh,
of
you want
these,
a separate boat for...
Well, we have teams that are, like, we have veteran teams, police officer teams,
right.
Fire department teams.
Mm-hmm.
The list is endless. So it's just to keep the support there and make it fun.
That sounds like a lot of fun. And the thing is, not only is it fun, but the great thing about it is the fact that there's going to be such a benefit to people who really need the help.
It is.
Yeah.
It's also a sense of accomplishment. Although you get the spirituality of it and the peace of mind and the ease, to me, sailing is an art. It's something that you learn, you acquire. Some people view it as work, and it can be. It can be. It can be a tiring day, especially depending on the weather.
Yeah.
But when you accomplish what it takes to learn how to sail effectively, I mean, that's a great feeling. I mean, you'll come in at the end of the day, and your day is done. You're good. You feel great. You don't need to do anything else.
I think it's just great. Our guest is Chicago Police Officer Harvey Marlin, father of a veteran and president of the Chicago Police Department and Veterans Sailing Club. And I just love what they're doing. I think it's great. And you hear him, he's reaching out. Any of you folks who want to be involved, is there a number they would call?
So we do have a Facebook page, Chicago Police Sailing Association.
What is it? I'm sorry.
The Chicago Police Sailing Association.
Okay.
Messages can be left there. And let's keep in mind that all of this is operated out of Jackson Park Yacht Club. Mm-hmm. Jackson Park Yacht Club also has a web page up as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
And long-term goals that we have that have not been set in place yet is to do a give back to the community, working with inner-city teens, inner-city youth.
So to teach them
yes,
sailing.
Yes, uh-huh, and a mentoring.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because what's happening is a lot of our young people are disconnected from how to spend their time. You know, it's either school or nothing. You know, there aren't a lot of services out
mm-hmm,
there.
Mm-hmm.
And sailing is such a great, great thing for the mind and the spirit that if we could pull more young folks in to water activities, whether it's sailing or anything, it doesn't matter. It can, at the end of the day, it's like a baby. They're ready to go to bed. They're done.
Yeah.
So,
you know, it's so interesting you say that because that is very true relative to water sports. A lot of us aren't involved in that to the degree that we should have been. And it was funny, obviously, a couple of years ago when I had a show here regularly during the week, Barbara Bird Bennett was my guest, who was the head of the Chicago Public Schools. And we had mentioned the fact that there had been a black woman that was elected head of the police department in Miami Beach. And they were happy about this because they weren't hiring a lot of African Americans, saying, well, they don't swim. And I made the comment to her that I learned how to swim in third grade. And her comment to me was, did you go to a public school? And I said, yes, I did. But that school, well, that pool was there for those white folks who moved out when my parents moved in, you know,
yeah.
and which is true, you know, and because I checked later and the pool hadn't, I won't get into the long story, but she did a great job in getting it put back.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't participate to the degree, and now hopefully that's changed, but what you're doing is just a great thing relative to water sports. Oh, my goodness. You know, start talking about being in shape. You got to be in shape if you're going to be a good swimmer.
It's great exercise.
It is. It is great. It'll get you in shape.
It's great exercise,
yeah, 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 yeah. Well, and of course, with the YMCAs and so forth, I'm sure, Officer Marlin, that there are a lot of people who are doing that. You know, which is just great. We our call-in number is 312-374-8130. If you want any information, we are talking to Chicago Police Officer Harvey Marlin, who is the father of a veteran. This is America's Heroes Group, of course, and president of the Chicago Police Department and Veterans Sailing Club. So it also includes the veterans. He's got some pictures here that I hope you'll go to our website and see, because Manny is taking pictures of them, and they're just great, some great pictures that you'll want to see. So this is just group. So sailing starts when? It's coming up soon, right?
Well, it's not a matter of when sailing starts, it's when the harbors are open.
Yeah, okay,
right.
Okay.
And that's when you can, you know, legally dock your boat without getting towed.
I got you.
So,
I'm sorry, I'm asking the wrong question.
No, it's okay. Just so I give proper information.
Yeah, great.
Because you could technically, I'm sure some people probably sail today.
Oh, you got you.
They may have been out.
I got you.
So,
that's if you have a boat that you're towing to.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Because everyone is not paying for dockage. Which is, again, you know, there are ways to get on the water. And you don't have to have a brand new shiny boat. You know, you can have an old boat, like my boat's an old boat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just want to be on the water and be able to sail.
Sure.
April 15th, the harbors allow you a courtesy of coming in a little early. They call it the early docking. But the actual season starts for docking May 1st.
Okay.
So then after that, you'll see many more boats come in.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I'm sure there were boats out on the water sailing.
Sure, you can do that as long as you're not docked.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
I got you. Yeah, right,
exactly.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure. With and tomorrow, you know, it's supposed to be 75 degrees.
Yes, there'll be sailors out there.
Oh,
yes.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Is yours a sailboat or
sailboat?
Sailboat.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are we talking about sailboats only?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'm glad I asked that.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is about sailing.
Yeah. This is about sailing.
Yes.
That's right. It's called the Sailing Club.
Yeah.
Duh. Right.
No, it's okay.
Yeah, that's great. And that's really more of a sport anyway. That
it is a sport, yeah. That especially when we talk about racing, which is what my sailing club tends to focus on, because that allows notice. Because mm-hmm. if we just go out sailing, we're just a couple of guys on the boat sailing,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
who cares?
Yeah.
But if you enter a race and now your boat name, your club name is out there,
mm-hmm.
if you win, if you place, you know, that's notice. And that gives you an opportunity to get the message out, which is mm-hmm. what our conversation is.
That's great.
Any opportunity to get the message out so that people know what law enforcement, police officers go through
mm-hmm.
and their sacrifices they make.
Right.
That's why it's the focus on racing.
Great.
And then, again, sailors like to brag.
Of course.
I could tell you that I'm a better sailor than you, but how do I prove it?
Uh-huh.
So then we race. And then that's how you prove it.
Excellent.
So we'll see who gets to the other side of the lake first. And then that's the guy that says, well, I'm a better sailor than you.
How many people normally, Officer Marlin, are on a boat?
Well, it depends on the size. You figure in Chicago, the average size of a sailboat tends to be anywhere from 27 to 30, maybe 35 feet. That's your average window right there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, people do have 25-foot sailboats. There's a gentleman in our club. He sails on a 25-foot sailboat in all kind of weather. I have to tip my hat to him.
Okay.
His name's Ernie. I have to tip my hat. He's out there in that little 25-foot boat right with the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
But anywhere from 27 to, say, 30, 35 is your average boat length for sailing. You do have larger boats, and there are mm-hmm. smaller boats.
And how many people would be on?
You figure
normally.
You could do a crew of four.
Okay. Because you got work to do.
You do. But
as you're sailing.
Yes, but then there's that people can get in each other's way.
Okay.
Because everybody's got a job to do,
mm-hmm.
so you're usually stationed in a certain spot on the boat, and if there's too many bodies on the boat, then you tend to start crossing over each other. But you can have six or eight people on the boat.
Oh, wow.
Because there is a technique where if you can imagine a boat under power of the wind, it's not directly level. It's a little sideways.
Sure.
The technical term is heeled. Mm-hmm. It's healing.
Healing.
The boat will heal a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
To counter that force, you want counterbalance. So if you have extra bodies, you'll have those sailors sit on the opposite rail to counterbalance the boat down.
Gotcha.
To counter that force against the wind.
Right.
And you'll, if you can remember any photos you may have seen,
yes.
of people sitting with their legs over, we call those rail meat.
Rail meat.
Rail meat. You may not be actually performing any particular task at that time, but you are helping the boat go faster.
Your ballast.
There,
yeah.
There you go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I could do that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Because we obviously, officer, have seen the races. I mean, it just gets involved.
It is.
And the Mackinac race, is that the big one?
That's the largest freshwater race in the world.
Okay.
And it's right here in Chicago.
Yes.
It's a very daunting race, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. It's well over 300 miles from here, from Chicago to Mackinac Island.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 3 to 4 day race for the smaller boats. For the larger race boats, because they're in a completely different category, they get there in a day. 2 days tops.
Sure.
You know,
done that?
Oh, I've done the Mackinac.
That's what I thought so.
It's
You've done it.
Easy race. We tend to have weather because mm-hmm. 3 or 4 days is enough time for weather to change, and it could be a challenge. But the guys that do the Mack race, they do it every year.
Yeah.
There's their experience. Many of them have done it 20 years, 30 years. They
wow.
have tons of experience, and, you know, they know what they're doing.
Of the number of people in this great group, Chicago Police Department, Veterans Sailing Club, what's the balance there with officers? Well, of course, some police officers are veterans, too. I was going to ask what's the percentage of veterans, but you've got...
You know what we could do? I could do some research, get some numbers for you.
You've got a number of them, that's all.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got.
Yeah,
you,
I don't know.
You're welcome,
but I do believe it's extensive.
Yes.
Because, you know, when I came on the job, I was working with Vietnam veterans.
Okay.
You know, guys from the 60s and 70s.
Sure.
That's who I worked with.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I started.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
And that's, it just keeps going.
Yeah.
And
you probably still have some people there.
I'm sure. They're up in age, but
they're still able to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, Mr. Marlin, Officer Marlin, we're just the president of the Chicago Police Department and Veteran Sailing Club. It's just a great thing. And, you know, you have been kind enough to invite me out, and I'm not hanging over the side. I jumped out of airplanes, but I don't work that's a whole different issue. That's a whole different issue. Give us a close.
Well, June 15th is the Gold Star Regatta. I'm hoping that we can get as much support as possible. Anyone that's interested in, especially if there are any police officers listening, just go on the Facebook page and leave a message, and we'll get back to you. And we just need as much support as we can get, because it's a lot of work trying to keep this thing going.
Congratulations. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Okay.
All right. That is just great. We, of course, now want to talk to our executive producer, Glenda Smith. Glenda's got an announcement that she always makes as our executive producer. Hey, Glenda.
Hi, Governor of Talk Radio.
How are you? Good, good.
Any questions or concerns regarding affordable housing, social services, wellness care, please feel free to call America's Heroes Group at 312-803-2618. We're located at 155 North Wacker Drive, Suite 4250. We thank you so much for watching us live on Facebook. Make sure you hit the Facebook like button at the top of our Facebook page. Therefore, you will stay connected and will receive future notifications regarding shows, events, information, and resources regarding veterans, armed forces, family members, and community. We're so grateful to our partner, Ms. Dorothy Lavelle, and the Chicago Crusaders. Our article on veterans, armed forces, and their family members can be viewed online at www.chicagocrusaders.com. To subscribe to the Chicago Crusaders weekly column, Voices with the Governor of Talk Radio, Cliff Kelly and America's Heroes Group, call the Chicago Crusader at 773-752-2500 or send an email to ads@chicagocrusaders.com to request a subscription. On behalf of America's Heroes Group, we wish you all a very blessed and happy Easter weekend. Thank you for listening.
And thanks to our technical producer, Tiara Randall.
She does a wonderful job for us. Yay, Tiara.
Yeah, Tiara, thank you so much. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Have a great weekend.